Hey, welcome to another week of Fox on Sports. I'm Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And this is the third time that we've recorded the intro. We walked in here and all the levels were off the charts. I think Harry probably would have killed us.
If he thought it was us. Thankfully, it wasn't.
If he thought it was us. Thankfully, it wasn't. But, I'm still a little bit discombobulated from trying to do that intro twice. But Harry, speaking of Harry, he's like the good luck charm of overtime. He's like a human walking rabbit's foot.
He owns overtime in the sport of hockey.
It's insane. So, I guess, do we want to start with the hockey? The hockey preempted us the other night.
It sure did.
Yeah, and I was very disappointed about that. But
guys, can you get it done a little bit quicker?
Right. Well,
thankfully they did in the next round.
But I guess it didn't help. So the hockey team played subsequent to a local college hockey game that started about 40 minutes late because of difficulties with clearing out the locker room.
Right.
And it's funny. Like, I remember you play in a baseball tournament. You finish the game and you get out of your dugout, and or like you even in playing hockey, like you play in a hockey league, and first of all, a lot of the rinks that you play in, like at lower men's league levels, have multiple locker rooms in them. But there are also people whose job it is just to go through, I'm sure there's a technical hockey term for it, to clear out the locker room.
Yeah, it's called the rink director.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Corey Parker informed me of that.
So, yes, the rink director's job is to go through and regulate,
and like Nate Dogg and Warren G.
Yeah, I mean, they're the ones whose job it is to kind of clear things out. In that case, they failed not just themselves.
Or the participants.
They failed us.
They sure did.
Yes. So, and our families.
So many unintended consequences.
Right, exactly. It's like the butterfly effect of this game isn't done. So, and
the rest of the state is put on hold.
The rest of the state's put on hold. Corey had to miss the beginning of the girls' game. We did at that girls' basketball game, so I guess we're going to talk about that first. We had one of the cooler things that I've seen at a sporting event where our poor PA announcer couldn't get, I'm not going to name his name, even though I enjoy him. Actually, it was Kenny Grenier.
Well, he didn't have Corey there to help him.
No, so they didn't run the national anthem. And it was, let's please rise for our nation's national anthem. And then
Everybody rose.
And then it was like a moment of silence for the fact that I can't get this thing to work, which then leads into some, and the thought crossed my mind, but I can't sing. Some enterprising person started singing, and then other people started singing. And then pretty soon, I never started singing. I don't think you did either.
I did not. I listened.
I'm going to say half the gym was singing the Star-Spangled Banner.
At least. I would say at least two-thirds.
I never did. The thing that it really makes you realize above everything is just how hard of a song that is to sing when the entire audience, people are sitting there singing, and the Rockets' red glare, like everybody just gets flat and realizes they can't hit whatever that is. Not a music guy. I love music, but I can't make it or tell you anything about it.
Yeah, I'm better at listening.
I'm good at listening and singing in my car. But so we had, and I guess this would be, I think, a good tradition to start at Bedford High girls basketball games.
The crowd sings the anthem. It was really a nice rendition.
It was.
And it was a very memorable moment.
Right. So, and I guess if we're talking about the basketball game, things sort of slowly went downhill from there. We saw a Portsmouth team that Bedford had beaten 49-45 earlier in the season.
49-43, yep.
Give or take 2 points. Yeah.
Right.
Basket here or there. Maybe it was a buzzer beater. But there were those in this game. We saw a Portsmouth team that really hadn't gotten the production from its guards in the previous game. All of a sudden, their point guard, Hebert, was on fire. What'd she get, 27, 28?
27 points,
yeah.
And she was 13 of 14 at the foul line.
Right, so she I'm going to say the first time they met, scored in the low single digits. Like, was not really a factor in the game. And then all of a sudden, the game just sort of came to her when we saw that game on Saturday night. And I don't think it was what Bedford was expecting. I think they thought they were going to see a lot more of the post players, the Corinne Lamonts and the Abby Lawrence's. But in this case, what they were seeing a lot of was a speedy point guard who just kept finding space on the floor and was throwing in some acrobatic shots or throwing up some acrobatic shots that were going in.
They were acrobatic and they were closely contested, and she just got every roll. I mean, you got to give her credit because she was aggressive.
Yeah.
And she took those tough shots with confidence. But the thing is, they kept going in. And she was one of the ones who had made a buzzer shot. They made buzzer shots at the end of the first quarter and the second quarter. And when they made the buzzer shot at the second quarter, they celebrated at half court. And it was a big momentum boost as they go into halftime. And then they ended up really pulling away in the fourth quarter. But
The fourth quarter was more a result of foul shooting than just about anything else. And the foul shooting was a result of Bedford having to foul to stop the clock to try to get a little bit of offensive momentum. It looked with a few minutes left like Bedford was really chipping away at that lead. And it was kind of a possession here, a possession there, where things were happening, where the Bulldogs were getting what looked to be an open look and missing a shot. And ultimately, if you're trailing by 7 or 8 points and you're trying to get it down to a two-possession game, you need to take advantage of those the two-point opportunities that you have. The Bulldogs didn't, and it wasn't a turnover. It was more missed shots than anything else. But ultimately, those missed shots yielded a Portsmouth possession, which yielded a 1-1, or later in the game, 2 free throws. And you and I sat there and talked about it. And we paid attention for some bizarre reason. We were still keeping stats on the thing, even though we weren't doing play-by-play of the game. The Portsmouth Clippers really never missed the front end of a 1-1. If they did, it maybe happened once in the game, but they set themselves up with that second free throw regularly. And even when they did miss the front end of a 1-1, we saw it. It was a 1-on-4. The shooter got the rebound, and somehow that possession started up again and resulted in a foul and 2 made free throws.
Yeah, that was the thing with the free throws in the fourth quarter. The final margin of victory really isn't indicative of how that game was played. It was very close throughout the entire game. And you got to give credit to Portsmouth's defensive approach. What they did is they put Ava Carlin, a much longer, taller defender, on Allie Morgan, and it made it harder for her to operate as she has been in recent games. She's been outstanding. She still managed to lead the team in scoring with 11, but it just wasn't the same offensive flow with this really strong defender, Ava Carlin, on Allie Morgan. And, of course, you also have to remember that Bedford was missing a very key player.
Right. It does not help when, and we talked about it with people on the floor after the game, when you have a shooter like Isabella King, and not to mention, it's not that she's just a shooter. She also has the ability to dribble, penetrate, and kick. But when you have somebody that really is a good three-point threat, as she is, it can make a big difference when you, all of a sudden, you can't space the floor as you had been. So we are going to take a quick break from talking about basketball. I believe this is Coach Derek Stank, so we'll see if we can make the phones work. Coach, are you there?
I'm here.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us. We're actually in the middle of recording, so this feels like a real live radio talk show. I'm always
you're on the air.
I'm always. Oh no, you're
bring
not
it on.
No,
bring
you're
it on.
Yeah, you're not on the air. We're not live, but so we're joined by Coach Derek Stank, who's with the Bedford High basketball program, or basketball. We were just talking about football program. Come on, man. Lauren Fox is talking. We got Andrew Hansen here with us. So, Coach, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. So, appreciate you joining us on literally super short notice. But for you, a lot has been going on lately. You're coming off a great season at BHS, another state title. But for you, when the opportunity to leave Bedford and get back to your wife's family out in Southern California, and really on a day where we woke up and it was basically 0 degrees, I don't think anybody in the town of Bedford can blame you. You had to jump at it. How hard is it for you, though, as a New Hampshire guy to leave the state?
You know, this is a very bittersweet moment for me and my family. We've been in this town now for over a decade. My wife is a teacher at one of the middle schools, and this is my 12th year here as a teacher and a coach. So to leave this program, this community, it hurts. It's not an easy decision. And if I could scoop Bedford up and bring it 3,000 miles across the country with me, I would. But unfortunately, that's just not an option. So you know, it was an opportunity for my family to relocate to their family and to be able to get my son by his grandmother out on the West Coast. It was definitely something we couldn't pass up. And, you know, in San Marcos, the school that I'm heading to, it's a beautiful high school. It's got 3,500 students. It's a brand new facility. So it's a great opportunity for me as a coach and as an educator also.
Well, for you as a coach and an educator, but also it's a fun place to be. You're not far from the ocean at all. And it's a program that's been established. The previous coach in his tenure there went 56-28. So you're not starting with something that's brand new and fresh. You're starting with something that really you have the opportunity to take it to another level. And not to mention the size of the school. I mean, that's roughly three times the size of Bedford High School. So obviously there are some great opportunities as far as player personnel goes. Now for you, you've had a great time. You mentioned being here for 12 years. What are some of your best memories of your time at Bedford High School?
You know, really the growth of this program. You know, I was here, everyone thinks of Bedford High School, and most people think recently of, hey, you know, they win, they're competitive, they always have success. But I remember the years, and I've been in this program, when we didn't win a game. And the first time we did win a game, it was by 6 points. And I remember getting blown out of football games. So to see the growth of where we've come from to where we are currently at as a program, that's been one of my greatest joys. And then to know that I had a big part in that and played a big role in that. So, you know, from an individual games, I mean, there's great moments. Obviously, the first state championship, nothing will ever replace that for this program. Come back and do it again 2 days later, 2 years later. Not once again, another great moment. And some of the games we've had along the way, whether it's a victory against Keene with Nikki Bayless, obviously an amazing game against a great Merrimack team a couple of years ago. And then just the amazing season that we had this year, all great memories, but it's mainly because not just those wins and losses, it's because of the players and the personnel, the staff, you know, that we have in this program. It makes it a special place, and it's definitely a tough one to leave.
Coach, you're leaving the program in great shape in terms of a winning tradition that you've helped build. What advice do you have to the returning players to try and continue the tradition and reach their potential next year?
You know, I looked at them when I told them I had to go, and I said, you know, we're a state championship team, and, you know, we just were, and we're going to be again. And in the game of football, it's never one person that makes the difference. It's everyone. It's a collective group of individuals that have a goal, that are willing to sacrifice for the betterment of the team. So, you know, I said, I'm one person. I might be the head coach, but I'm only one person on this entire staff and this entire program, from community, parents, players, and whatnot. So I said, the ship has got to keep sailing. And the game goes on, just as if someone gets injured, well, the game goes on when someone leaves. So they'll find a great coach here. They'll replace them with someone that's willing to do the things that I did with my staff. And the game will go on, and I'm confident that Bedford's going to continue to have a good tradition of winning here.
We're joined by Bedford High football coach Derek Stank, and you're going to a school in San Marcos, California with a winning tradition. What will you do to put your stamp on that program from day one?
You know, I mean, for me, it's really just be myself. I'm a coach that's pretty methodical. I have pretty high standards and expectations. And going out there, I want to get to know everything about that program that I can. My goal is not to go in there and change it. My goal is not to go in there and uphaul. You know, they've had a winning season, 8-2 last year, playoff bid. So they're a good team. My goal is to go out there, wrap myself up in that culture, figure out how I can assist, and then ultimately just give it as much possible time and energy as I can facilitate as a head coach.
It's a lot to accomplish, and it's a lot to accomplish quickly, just knowing who all the personalities are on the team. And I have to imagine it's a team that's going to be roughly twice the size of the team that you'll leave here in Bedford. But for you, you're walking into a very good situation with the program, with it being in close proximity to where your wife is from and the family's from. But you've also had a lot of tremendous personal growth in the time that you've been, from the time that you graduated from UNH until leading Bedford to a couple state titles. What are your ultimate career goals in football?
Football is an opportunity to help young men and women develop as individuals. You know, people spend a large part of their life playing football, but in comparison to the amount of time they spend being a father, you know, amount of time they spend being a husband, being in, you know, working at a job, running a firm, you know, and ultimately just being a good citizen in this world. You know, those are the traits that I think football teaches you the most. So, you know, to walk away from this town, to be able to go to a new one and be able to help facilitate the growth of young individuals so they can be better people when they move on. Because I'm telling you, the things I learned from the University of New Hampshire, and I've learned along my way here as a coach at Bedford, you know, they developed me into the person that I am, not just the football coach that I am. So I think those goals, they have to remain above the game, because ultimately that's what we're doing here. You know, if I was coaching the NFL team, they might be different. But, you know, we're dealing with young adolescents that have an opportunity. You know, we have an opportunity to change their future, to change their lives. And that's got to be above everything else.
So for you, I guess it's impressive. You look at Coach Sean McDonald and the coaching tree that he has that just kind of continues to branch out a little bit. You're out on the West Coast with another Sean McDonald guy. You're out there with Chip Kelly, UCLA guy.
Yep, he's in a bit of a different ball game than I am. but nonetheless, he is out on the West Coast, and I wish him the best of luck. Obviously, he's had a heck of a career since he left UNH, and I'm sure he's going to do great things at UCLA.
Maybe he'll call you in the next year or two and ask you about some of your players.
Hey,
any connection I can get to help out the boys of San Marcos, I would definitely be welcome to.
Never hurts at all. We're with Coach Derek Stank of the Bedford High football program. And for you, aside from the fact that it's probably 80 degrees out there and you got that nice coastal breeze, great Mexican food, In-N-Out Burger, I'm making myself really hungry right now.
Yeah, the food is pretty good.
Oh, dude, yeah.
Got to worry about that waistline just a little bit.
Serious. Yeah, you'll sweat it all off. It's warm out there. What are you most looking forward to in California?
You know, I'm looking forward to being near family. For the last 12 years that I've been up here after college, and even for the 5 years through college, my family's from Pennsylvania. My wife is from Oceanside. So we're at the closest 500 miles away from our blood family. So to not have grandparents and moms and dads and aunts and uncles and sometimes just people that, as much as I have some friends here that I dearly consider family, there's still something to be said about that family that you're missing. So to be near them, it's a 15-minute drive down the road to Sarah's hometown and house. So, I mean, that's a special thing. I'm excited for the opportunity to go out there and, you know, do it again, you know, to take a program that's had a lot of success and try to make it even better. You know, and I'm excited for the challenge, the fact that this is a big program. There's 160 kids on the roster. You know, I could be looking at 20 plus coaches on the staff.
Holy
cow. It's a big ball game. It starts on August 1st and playoffs will run you straight up into late December. So, you know, it's a next step spring ball, you know, PE football classes, teaching football during PE. So it's a challenge for me. It's definitely going to be, but it's something that I welcome as I try to, you know, further myself and ultimately just, like I said, the most important, get my family near my family and, you know, hopefully create a great life out there with some nice Mexican food and some warm weather.
It's a great place to be. As a guy who's from out there, I can say it, but we'll always welcome you back here in Bedford with open arms, and thank you for the access that you provided to us and the opportunities that you've given us over the last couple seasons, and we'll wish you nothing but the best when you're out there.
All right, well, thank you very much, and I'll miss this place dearly. I hope to return as much as time as I can throughout the course of the year. So,
well, we look forward to that. Well, Coach Derek Stank, good luck out at San Marcos High School, and we'll look forward to hearing about everything that's going on as you get closer to next season.
All right, sounds good. Thank you very much, and best.
Thank you, Coach.
Take care, Coach.
Bye.
That's pretty crazy. I mean, that's a massive high school.
160
kids. Like, but you think about, okay, I'm looking at it on a map right now because I know that I can drive up Ortega Highway and go from, like, Carlsbad, Oceanside into San Marcos. Oddly enough, that's, God, I'm going to say that's probably San Marcos is probably 10 minutes from where my dad lives.
Okay.
So, like, it's triangulated. Like, Oceanside is on the coast. If you drew a straight line east, you'd get to my dad's place probably a half an hour away. And he's he's in the middle of nowhere. It's called Valley Center, but it's not the center of anything. And then if you did a triangle, basically down toward the south, you'd get to San Marcos. So coach is like, you fail to realize there's always luck that goes into things, but how lucky is he? First of all, he's gotten to ply his trade here for a while with a very supportive fan base and very supportive program. But on top of that, now he's going out there and he's basically two towns away, 15 minutes away. But if you pick the wrong time of day to go, probably going to be an hour and a half. But for all intents and purposes, like if you play it right, you're 15 minutes away from family. Like that's a wonderful opportunity for him. And not to mention the fact you're now recruiting out of a school that's got 3,500 kids.
Yeah, it's really exciting for him to join a program like that. And you said play it right. It really seems like he has played it right in terms of, you know, taking this opportunity to do something great for his family, to be close to family, but also parlaying it into a great opportunity to be able to have those things come together. It's rare that you see that when someone is going across the country. So I'm excited for him to have that opportunity and definitely wish him well out there.
Right. I can tell you from experience, sometimes it lines up and you just, the stars align and you wind up in the right place. And, you know, I got lucky in 2007. Yeah, that was a while ago. That the team that I had the opportunity to go to work for was well, first of all, I got lucky in what, 2003 when I weaseled my way into a job in Kansas City and we were living 20 minutes away from the in-laws.
Right.
And, you know, they have a young family, like the importance for them of being close to family just so that family can be around is great. The importance of that from a convenience standpoint of, hey, we want to go out tonight, or he's got a coach and he's got a game and I have somewhere to be, who's going to be with the kid. Like a lot of those things are taken care of. Like it makes, there are things that are far more complicated about living in California than here, but there are things that are far easier when you don't have to worry about some of the basics. And so for him, that's a wonderful opportunity. I was fortunate enough to have it happen twice, going to Kansas City and going to San Bernardino, California, which was an hour from basically all my family. But I knew that if I needed something or wanted to go see my friends or go see my mom, or she wanted to come up and it was just Maggie at that point, come see Maggie. Like all that stuff was available to us, and they have a different bond than Libby and my mom do because they spent so many afternoons together when Jenny and I were both working. So I'm happy for coach to have that opportunity. It's like, how often do you look at it and you say, my next logical step is 15 minutes from home and a massive football program in Southern California? Like, dude, go.
Yeah,
we'll miss you, but
yeah.
Nobody in their right mind would ever say no. It's
right.
Great. So we wish him all the best. We'll obviously be keeping an eye on things, and hopefully somebody else bringing the profile of New Hampshire higher on a national level. So getting back to Bedford, we talked about girls basketball a little bit. Their season ended with that 50-34 loss. Some positive notes out of the season. Lizzie Stevenson will continue her playing career next year at Roger Williams.
Yes, good luck to Lizzie.
So awesome to see that. And then some of the others, Amanda Jonas was one that I think you and I saw really improve as the season went on. So I'm interested to see how that goes. Allie Morgan goes into her senior year. Isabella King, a lot of freshmen saw pretty significant minutes, whether it was Mumpini, whether it was Pennock. Like there were some players who really played a strong role that I look at this and I say, yeah, they had two seniors. It was from start to finish, not a terribly easy season. There were times when they made it look easy, but they had to kind of scratch and claw. Going into next year, you look at this team and you say, wow, this is a mature team that really should be able to do some damage next year.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to lose Kendi and Lizzie, but that core that's coming back, I think the sky's the limit for them. You know, you just can't, you can't quantify what it is to have a point guard like Ali Morgan who can score and distribute and defend and plays with so much confidence. And like you said, Amanda Jonas took a real leap down the stretch, became a real scoring threat. And then Isabella King's going to take it to the next level. You've got players like Emma Rosenbaum who had that 13-point game late, so she showed how much of a scoring threat she can be. And then, like you said, all those young players who got really significant minutes throughout the season, that's just going to be huge for their development over the summer and into next winter.
So you always hate to go out with a loss. I'm curious to see what happens tonight. We're recording the show on Thursday. Tonight will be Pinkerton taking on Portsmouth. And for Portsmouth, if memory serves, that was their sort of low water mark of the season when they lost to Pinkerton. I believe it was like 59-22. They got thrashed. So curious to see if that Portsmouth team, where we really did see some improvement throughout the season, how they play going into the game against Pinkerton, or whether the somewhat inevitable Pinkerton BG final will come to fruition. I'm curious to see. It was interesting to read the Portsmouth Herald. They were talking about that loss, but Portsmouth was without Lawrence and Lamond, two of their bigger players. Obviously, that's going to make a difference when you're going up against somebody like Brooke Kane.
Oh, that's enormous. Yeah.
So should be fun. That one takes place tonight at SNU, not at SNU Arena, but SNU Arena, Saturday.
Hockey.
Yeah.
So, state championship.
Yep.
Coming up.
It was a little state championship Saturday at 5 o'clock. I hope I can be there. I don't know where else I'd have to be.
Bedford against Trinity.
Yep. Should be a good one. Although, one thing I will say about that is, you know, if you were setting your calendar and you're like, oh, yeah, I got somewhere to be after the game, you might want to reconsider setting your calendar just because the Bedford hockey team likes to play extra hockey.
Yeah, exactly. Do not set any...
Don't make any hot dates, doctor's appointments, nothing.
Don't put any appointments in stone. Make sure you have a flexible schedule until about 9 p.m.
It could go all night. So the one that we were preempted by was, first of all, there were two teams that didn't get out of the locker room. Game starts late. Add that to a late goal given up by Bedford. Two overtime periods. And then by some bizarre miracle, a last-second goal won the game for Bedford. At the end of the second overtime, got them out of there. We were still begging and pleading to go on for the fourth quarter of the game.
Right.
But alas, it was not to be. And then who had all three goals for Bedford against Exeter? Was it Roberto?
I don't recall. Roberto had both goals in the semifinal game, right?
Yes.
The 2-1 win over Concord. He put in the rebound to send Bedford to the state championship game.
Jack Sylvain had all three Bedford goals in the previous game. I knew it was somebody with a little bit of a resume behind him, but Sylvain had all three in that double overtime game, the win over Exeter. Then Roberto had both in the single overtime. That's a somewhat truncated game for the Bulldogs.
Very, just a quick little contest.
A breeze. Roberto had both there, knocked in the game winner off a shot from Alex Lobdell. So, and again, the Bulldogs have a shot at a state title.
Yeah, really exciting moment. And then to watch that celebration where they all skate down the ice and dislodge the net and celebrate in front of the fans. They've just got a great, you know, momentum of spirit here as they head into Saturday's championship.
Yeah, so it should be a lot of fun. Saturday at 5 o'clock. If you're listening to us on Saturday morning, head on down to SNU Arena. I think I'm going to try. If I can go, I'm going to try to go.
Let's do it.
Like, yeah, you know, why not? It's should be a lot of fun to see. Just good quality hockey. And these guys, I'm going to say guys because I'm talking about the boys team in this case, but the guys and girls, because we have a girls hockey team as well. Hockey players, I don't think anybody realizes the amount of time and effort and sweat that these players put in, but also that their families put in to help them get into this position. So, love to have a nice, loud Bedford contingent out at SNU Arena. If you're listening to us on Sunday night, too bad. You can go back in time. You know, the other thing. And if you can't watch the game, I wonder if Harry's calling it.
They're calling it on radio.
Okay,
and
that's
then
right.
Video is going to be tape delayed.
Okay, there you go. Video is tape delayed. So That's what we know. Anyway, big stuff going on in the world of Bedford sports.
We also, there's another coaching change that we need to announce. Coach Stank is on his way out.
Yep.
But in terms of the coaches who are coming in,
yep.
New freshman baseball coach in Bedford, none other than my partner here, Lauren Fox. Congratulations, coach.
Did you see that on the ticker on SportsCenter?
Yes.
Okay, that's good.
Exactly. They showed the link to Twitter. Then I went to Twitter to read more about it. But the news came out this week to make it official.
Really, that was the lead story. It's like nobody wanted to talk about LeBron passing Michael Jordan in scoring.
No, that's a footnote in history.
This is what we want to talk about. This thing. No. It'll be fun. I really have no idea what I'm in for. I've seen the listing of the kids that will be freshmen. Obviously, as was the case last year, you had some of the freshmen, and there were three in particular, Fletcher Pratt and Kyle Levine, that all played varsity. Then you had some that played JV. So the freshman team, I don't quite know who all wind up with. The funny thing for me is there are a lot of kids that I've coached or coached against, thrown BP to. Like, it'll be fun. It's interesting to me because, like, it's just another chapter in the story for these guys. But obviously, there's no secret how much I enjoy baseball.
And that will become known to all who don't know already. I mean, I'm sure a lot of these kids will know that already, but
yeah.
Your passion for the game will rub off on them for sure.
Yeah, that was kind of the biggest factor with this whole thing is I can work my schedule around it so that I can be at practices. The hardest thing for me, and if anybody's listening and wants to help me transport my kids from point A to point B, I'll take whatever help I can get. But the biggest thing for me was, all right, I want these kids to play with joy. It's not, you don't just play to play. If you're playing just because you feel like mom or dad are making you and you're in high school, it might be time to have that tough conversation with mom or dad and say, hey, this might not be the thing for me. I want to do something else. But if you're playing, I feel like this is a bachelor. If you're playing baseball for the right reasons, that's what this is about. These are kids that have the opportunity to get out and play. Early season will be cold. We all know, like, that's going to be probably for me the biggest adjustment is, oh yeah, and the fact that I'm going to have to wear shoes.
Right. Jeez.
Yeah, that's going to be tough. I'm still getting my arms around the fact that in Little League, I walk around, I throw BP and flip-flops. I'm wearing flip-flops today, it's like 15 degrees. So, that for me will be a big adjustment, but it'll be a lot of fun to work with those kids, help them grow, help them learn. And Billy Chapman's got a great program. He has a lot of things very well outlined as far as the program goes. All I'm trying to do is kind of contribute to that. And hopefully kids come out of that first year and say, this was fun. I want to do it again, and have improved to a point that they want to work on their own, because this as well as anybody, it's coaches can only have so much effect on you on the field. It's the coaches that can somehow get you to figure out that, hey, you should go work on this other times. Or all of a sudden it just clicks in your head that, hey, maybe I should work on this. This is a fun thing. And I can have a moment of reflection and figure out this is where I need to improve. Those are the biggest things that guide a player's improvement, not what happens during the course of a season. It's the rest of the other 45 weeks of the year that will really turn somebody into a better or a great player.
Yeah, it's a special stage in their development, that freshman year where they're continuing to adjust to the bigger field. They're growing still, getting stronger. And so it is a real opportunity for you to work on those two things of helping them with the fundamentals that they can go practice on their own, and also the excitement to want to go do that. And you're right. You can't just, take a few extra swings during the season and hope that long term you're really making big strides as a baseball player. It's skills that you need to work on throughout the year and years to continue to grow.
Yeah, the season's way too short here. Like... We got, basically 7 weeks for all intents and purposes. Going back to California, we were talking about with Coach Stank, the opportunity that you have out there, you can play 60 or 70 games in your sleep, like without really thinking about it, because, you know, you go through a high school season, even in a shorter season, you're still playing 30 games, give or take. Then you finish the high school season, you're playing summer ball, you're playing two or three games a week, but it never feels like you're really putting this whole load on your body. Then you get into fall ball, then you get into winter ball, and by the time it's done, like, you've played 60, 70, 80, if not more, without really thinking about it. It's like a game and a half a week gets you to 75.
It's just so much easier, and it's all because of the weather. You know, in when out there, as you're leading into a new season, if you want a long toss for a few weeks to get your arm strength up, you just go outside wherever you want and long toss. Here, it's like the biggest production to try and, you know, find a time and a place to throw and get your body ready, because baseball is demanding physically. You can't just show up.
Right.
You know, like the big leaguers, they don't show up in Florida.
No.
And start to get their arm in shape.
Yes.
They work out in the off season and get their bodies ready so that they can handle spring training, and they're just sort of fine tuning to get ready for the season. That's what it's like in all those warm states, California all the way across to Florida. That's why you have so many professional baseball players come from those places. It's just easier to train.
Right. It becomes far easier to train. Even a few weeks ago, Maggie and I were, you know, you can't really do a long toss because my lawn is covered in snow. So we're doing weighted ball work, you know, with, it's a slightly different. So you're using, I don't know if you've ever done it, we're using like a 6 and an 8, but then somewhere, basically the way that it works is you ramp up a little bit to a heavier ball, then you dial it back down to a lighter ball to get more arm speed. So you go from like a 6 to an 8 to a 4, which feels like you're throwing a cotton ball.
Right.
And then back to a 5 ounce baseball, which still feels weird, but like you can build arm strength with that. You have to obviously be careful because it's an unnatural motion anyway, throwing a baseball, and could be made even worse by throwing something that's slightly heavier than a 5 ounce baseball. But your options really are limited to get that long toss. And if I look back to where all of a sudden, it was probably between my freshman and sophomore years of high school, all of a sudden, my arm strength just went way up. And it was because we would just play around, like, all right, how far can I go down the line and still throw it to home plate? And it was just playing games of long toss, not going out there with any directed, all right, I'm going to try to long toss to you from X feet. It's, all right, we're just going to play around like we're dude perfect. And that, We lack that here. Not to mention, even if my lawn wasn't covered in snow, it's cold.
Right.
Like, good luck warming up.
That's also not good for your arm.
No, not at all. So yeah, it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. What I want to be able to do, and you and I haven't even talked about this yet, I want to look at the schedule because we got to make sure we can do some varsity games.
Right.
So, like, I love doing basketball and I do enjoy calling football play-by-play, but my favorite play-by-play is baseball.
You've done it a few times?
Couple. So, yeah, I want to make sure that we're still able to do a handful of varsity games. So we're going to have to look at that schedule, too. But, yeah, so should be interesting. Should be fun. I had something else cross my mind, and I forgot. Oh, you were talking about spring training. There you go. So we were driving to catch a plane from, like, Central Florida down to South Florida. It was... My wife likes to play travel agent and find the cheapest flights. And so we wound up in Central Florida, but needed to be in South Florida. And because of that, we're driving down and she says, well, can we stop at Dodger Town? And I admit,
you say no, that would not be fun for me. Well, I'm going to decline.
It's weird. So I haven't been to Dodger Town in like 20 years. That used to be obviously where the Dodgers held spring training. You walk into Dodger Town, it's been owned by the O'Malley family who owned the Dodgers for a long time. It hasn't been a spring training facility for like 12 years. So you walk into Dodger Town and it feels entirely different than it did back in the 90s when it was this pristine facility. I've never been to Augusta National outside of like driving in through the gates and looking around, and they said, sir, please leave. But I have a, it felt to me like I thought Augusta National would feel like you're driving on streets and it's like Jackie Robinson Way and Sandy Koufax and Duke Snider, Vince Scully, like all these names. And then to go back there, MLB is just, or is in the process of taking over management of Dodgertown. But to go there and look around, and you have the old Holman Stadium, which is the same name as our stadium down in Nashua, oddly enough. You have Holman Stadium there that used to be a minor league baseball facility after the Dodgers. It was a Florida State League facility. Now it's they use it for college games, but seats are faded. They never had dugouts there. They always had the players just sitting in front of fences. They now have tarps over above that. It's just, it needed a little bit of work. It was nice to walk in there from the baseball standpoint. And it just happened that we were there when MLB was, it just worked out well. We were walking around the conference center. They have the Jackie Robinson room with some amazing pictures in it. You're walking through into locker rooms and, you know, there's a manager's office with a picture of Tommy Lasorda on the right outside the door. And like there are traces of the Dodgers everywhere within there. But MLB is now taken over. Well, and one of MLB's highest ranking executives just happened to be there that day. So, you know, nobody's wandering around. My wife goes, is that so-and-so? Like, oh yeah. So we go over and say hi.
Nice.
Yeah. It's just, it gives you that baseball flavor. The weird thing is though, if you had been in Dodger Town 25 years ago, like it would have been teeming with ball players. And now it's, you know, they have a little bit of tournament games going on and some high school games, but for the most part, it was sleepy. So I'm curious to see what the next step in the life cycle is for Dodger Town, which has been around for what, 60 something years. So should be interesting. Anyway, do you want to take a break or do we want to keep rolling?
It's up to you.
Let's take a break. Come right back, talk a little bit about the NBA, MLB, MIT.
Maybe some NFL.
NFL, maybe. Did I say MLB? I don't remember. Anyway, you're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox.
And Andrew Hansen.
And Hansen gets to do all the fun stuff, really.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You went to Dodgertown.
I did go to Dodgertown. So, yeah, I was in Dodgertown while you were doing this.
Yeah, I got to go to the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference. I think they've had it 12 or 13 years now, and I've had a chance to go 6 or 7 times. It's just a fascinating conference, 2-day conference in Boston. And Daryl Morey, the general manager of the Houston Rockets, is one of the co-founders of it. And so it is NBA focused more than the other sports, but every sport is covered, and the way that analytics are affecting sports is just undeniable, and it's really significant and fascinating. So I wanted to touch on some of the fun highlights from the conference. Paul Pierce, local legend, was there on a couple of the panels.
Nice.
And somebody was referencing how he may have been the one that really introduced the step back jumper.
Really?
Or took it to a new level. And so then he joked, yeah, that may be true, but I did not invent the step back.
Okay.
And of course James Harden gets credit for that.
Well, the step back used to be illegal.
Right. But now it's welcomed.
Right. Yeah, I have yet to figure out how that's possible, but yeah, it's a thing that apparently is okay now.
Yeah.
You just walk wherever you want.
As long as they're quick, short steps.
Right. Did you see there was a play, and I don't remember who it was, who caught Durant. It was from the Celtics. Caught Durant from behind, and it was a block, a steal, and a rebound all in one was the joke.
Yeah, it was Tatum.
That makes sense. But Durant caught the ball and easily took a step before he came down, and I'm sitting there watching that on ESPN, the highlight, and I'm like, why wasn't that a travel before anything else happened?
Right.
It's just because, like, John or Andy would have called it a travel.
Definitely.
Like, I've been called for that. But no, you know, it is how it is.
Yeah. So speaking of the state of the NBA, another fun exchange was a sit-down interview between Bill Simmons and Commissioner Adam Silver. It was an hour-long interview, lots of fun back and forth. And just talking about the health of the NBA, they had a fun exchange about an expansion team in Seattle, which has been talked about for a while. Adam Silver is always asked about it. And so Bill Simmons says, you know, when is it going to happen? When are we going to get the expansion team in Seattle? And Commissioner Silver just said, I don't know, I'm not sure. And so then Bill Simmons was pressing him on it and started to kind of negotiate on behalf of Seattle. He said, how about this? How about if I give you $2.5 billion and we don't share in the revenues, the TV revenues for 5 years? Is that enough to get Seattle into the league in terms of negotiating a new franchise? And Commissioner Silver just said, that's not enough.
Seriously?
Yeah, that's not enough. $2.5 billion.
Billion. And for a team that's going to stink for years.
Right, that's not enough. I mean, the values of these franchises are skyrocketing. Some of them are now valued at $4 and $5 billion.
Okay.
So the NBA is in a really healthy place. Another fun panel was called Rebooting the Rivalry, and it was about the Celtics and Lakers. So owner Wick Grusbeck was there, and owner Jeannie Buss of the Lakers was there. And you and I have talked a lot about the Lakers and Celtics because there's been so much going on with those two teams. And this was moderated by Jackie McMullen. A lot of fun back and forth between those two. And then a lot has happened in the last week with those two franchises. The Lakers, who were right on the precipice of the playoffs and all the focus on LeBron, go out that night and lose at Phoenix.
Right.
One of the worst two or three teams in the NBA. And the, memorable moment of that game was LeBron inbounding the ball off the back of the backboard in the second half. So it's just like folly after folly and bad loss after bad loss for the Lakers, who've lost recently to the Pelicans, the Suns, you name it, all these bottom tier teams. And then they go out and lose to the Clippers in the Battle of LA with the team they're chasing to try and get in the playoffs, which more or less effectively ended their chances at the playoffs. And then they go out and lose again last night to Denver at home, which was more expected because Denver's a great team. But at least they had the one positive moment where LeBron passes Michael Jordan on the all-time scoring list. Now LeBron is fourth all-time with Kobe next on the list.
Right. The other interesting thing, though, was how Jeannie Buss tried to pin the fact that the Lakers are bad now, worse now, I guess, on the media.
Yes.
Which apparently this is like the new thing to do. Hey, like, things didn't go my way. It's the media's fault. And in that case, it was more about, hey, we have all these young players and their feelings were hurt by being included in trade rumors that were completely unfounded. But wait a second, if they were unfounded, why didn't anybody say they were unfounded at that point in time? And why was there so much talk about LeBron and Anthony Davis? If they were unfounded, they were unfounded, and somebody, Rob Pelinka or Magic, should have been like, nope, we're not doing this. This isn't happening. These are our players. We're building with the players. Nobody said that it wasn't happening.
Exactly.
So now you have Jeannie Buss who, I grew up as a Laker fan. Dr. Jerry Buss was the owner. I'm not a Laker fan anymore. It's hard to be, like, it was one thing to be a Laker fan in the 80s when Magic, Kareem, James Worthy, Michael Cooper, Byron Scott. Byron Scott, by the way, got on, I don't know whose show he was on. I guess there are people on Twitter still blaming Byron Scott for the fact the Lakers are bad, which is funny because he hasn't been the coach for years. But you look at like the golden age of the Lakers. First of all, they got lucky twice. They got Magic and they got James Worthy. Just dumb luck twice. And almost the kind of thing now that if the NBA, if that were going to happen in the NBA, the NBA would say, no, that's not valid. Like, that trade isn't valid.
We're
skipping over and going to the next thing. But they got really lucky twice. But I don't know. Like, for Jeannie Buss to come out and say that, I just shake my head. To me, the Celtics are a prime example of, hey, you have a team that kind of weathered some storms and has now been relevant for a really long period of time.
Yeah. And we'll get to the Celtics in a second. I want to follow up on Jeannie Buss because she said a couple other interesting things. One of them was about drafting Magic Johnson. She was talking about her family and how back when they had that first pick, Jerry West wanted to pick Sidney Moncrief,
but it was apparently her dad who said, we're going to take Magic. And so there was a lot of interesting talk about the Buss family over the years, and they asked, what was the hardest thing you've had to do in your time with the Lakers? And she said, fire her brother. So, the Buss family has really been at the core of the Lakers' fortunes here for quite a long time. But you're right. At the conference, she did make that statement where she really tried to blame the media for everything that's happening with in the stuff inside the locker room with the Lakers' young players. And you're also right that Magic and Rob Pelinka did not come out and deny it.
No, nobody did.
I think they confirmed it. It was confirmed many times over that the proposals were made by the Lakers, where they were offering 5 or 6 players and multiple draft picks for Anthony Davis, all those young players. And that's why Magic Johnson flew across the country after the trade deadline to talk to those young players and have a team meeting and talk about the rest of the season. Where there's smoke, there's fire, and there was definitely fire. They had those trade talks. Those young players were included, and it's not the media's fault.
No, she's foolish to say that, because who's going to listen to her at that point? Like, it's just, you're foolish to go out and say that, because you already have, in a lot of ways, lost a lot of credibility over the years as an owner. Your franchise continues to circle the drain, and now you go out and say that. Instead of just saying, hey, we did it, and now we just got to pick up the pieces. Like, don't blame somebody else. They are doing their jobs.
Right, exactly.
So it is what it is. Whatever.
So on the Celtics side, it's been a lot more success since that conference.
Absolutely.
They had that absolutely signature win over Golden State, in Golden State by more than 30 points, from a team that has, the other team in the NBA that's had these chemistry issues on the front pages for weeks now. That's the Celtics, and they've been in a funk, and apparently on that cross-country plane trip, they sort of turned the corner somehow. And one of the quotes from Kyrie Irving that I think was very important is, he said something along the lines of, he just decided to stop feeling like it was him against the world. Because in all these interviews, he's been talking about leadership and the internal strife and him, trying to connect with these younger guys who are ultra competitive. They want their playing time, and everybody's butting heads. And, he sort of just took a step back and said, all right, instead of battling everybody, let me just try and get back to leading by example. That's not what he said, but that's what he did. And he was facilitating that offense right from the start in the Golden State game. He played excellent, but Gordon Hayward was the one who came off the bench and showed everybody, hey, you remember that guy who was an all-star in Utah? I'm still here. I'm back.
Oh, but you just watch and you say, this, the NBA, and this has been a pattern throughout this season, and we've seen it over and over and over again. Teams fall behind by 20 points, and then I can never remember in close to 40 years of watching the NBA, I do not remember a time when a lead that was 24 points wasn't necessarily safe. But because of the proclivity of three-point shooters, because of teams being able to play lockdown defense at times, because of one team getting hot and the other team getting ice cold, now you have a point in time. It's because of the style of play. If you're leading by 20 points, you can't clear your bench and just say, hey, scrubs, go in the game, because you're going to give some of that lead back. You have to be more intelligent about subbing than just saying, hey, now it's garbage time for the fourth quarter, because other teams will come back if you don't really drive a nail in their coffin, basically. And it's because of the style of play of the NBA now of, hey, we're spacing the floor, we're swinging the ball, we're looking for an open shot. And what we see now, too, and I mean, you saw it in the 80s, too. Like, I remember I think it was like 85, 86 or 86, 87 NBA Finals, where the Lakers lost by 40 points or something on the Mother's Day Massacre, and then I believe wound up winning that series. You saw it then, but it seems like it is a really way more regular occurrence now than it was, of teams getting super hot and getting super cold. And it's the team that is going to win a series and is going to win the whole thing at the end of the year. And really, frankly, I have no idea who it's going to be, but the team that's going to win it all is the team that has fewer games where they go cold It's not about getting hot. It's fewer games when they just stink.
Yeah, and the Celtics are really intriguing for all those topics you just raised because they have so many guys who will shoot the three-pointer. One of their drawbacks in terms of avoiding getting cold in a series is they don't get to the free throw line very much. And that's huge, especially in the playoffs. When you if you have somebody like James Harden who gets to the line 10 times a game, that really increases the chances that if your shooting is cold, well, you can still weather the storm and come out victorious because you're getting those easy points at the line.
Right.
And the Celtics don't do that. But they are so deep on the wing where they've got Gordon Hayward and Jaylen Brown coming off the bench.
That's you look, it's just an abundance of riches on that team.
It is. And finally, Gordon Hayward took it to the next level, and I have to think it's in large part to Jackie McMullen writing that piece on ESPN about him this week. It came out the day of the Golden State game talking about how he was finally hitting his groove right before the All-Star break. He had three really good games, but then he tweaked his ankle in a workout, and so the five games after the All-Star break, he was cold again, really struggling. And you know, in the article, it says he is still dealing with pain. I mean, not only did he have the gruesome injury, and it's very tough mentally, but he's still getting over it physically. And his trainer came out in this article and said, you know, I think next year is where we're really going to see Gordon Hayward get back to being Gordon Hayward. But I think just having that get out and, you know, it allowed him to kind of turn the page a little bit. And he had the great performance against Golden State. Then last night he hit the game-winning bucket in the last 5 seconds against Sacramento Kings. So great back-to-back road victories for the Celtics. And, you know, their stock's really pointing up.
Yeah, it has been interesting to see. And I like watching Kyrie play. I like his style of play. He is a polarizing figure. But I think pretty much any of those guys that are in the upper echelon of NBA players are polarizing figures. It's they tend to be like the sun. they are the magnetic force that draws everything to them. And if as they go, so goes everybody else. If they're having a bad week, and we all have bad weeks, and they're moody, and the media gets to them, and somebody asks the wrong question, like, batten down the hatches. There are very few guys that can just sort of hold it together. And, I think that's one of the things that has made that Golden State team succeed over the years is they don't have just one son. They have multiple that they all, like, not one guy is sucking the energy out of the room. They all, like, one day it could be Draymond, then it's Steph. Klay never really does. But they all kind of do it a little bit at a different time. And they sort of, it's like they're rodeo clowns. Like, they're, you know, one guy's in the ring about to be gored by the bull, and the other guy pops in with the red blanket, and the bull goes that way. Like, they're the ones that are taking the deflection off of everybody else. Whereas Kyrie, by virtue of being the older guy in the locker room, I'm not saying that when all is said and done, Tatum might have a better NBA career. Jaylen Brown could have. Like, there are guys that could have a better NBA career than Kyrie Irving does. But at this point in his career, he's the guy in that locker room. He's the one-name guy.
Exactly. He's the biggest star with the most success. And I agree, the team is going to go as he goes, and it is going to come down to his leadership. And it seems like they've turned the page now chemistry-wise, which I think is most important, because if they're all playing together for each other, they showed what they're capable of. They can go into Golden State and win by 30. They can win the championship this year. They're finally showing signs of it. It's really exciting.
And now we're talking about Golden State. Like, what's wrong with the Warriors? Yeah. Guess what? I don't think anything's wrong with the Warriors. I think it's an 82-game season. And stuff just happens. So, and my hope for the Celtics is that they're not peaking. They're not having their kumbaya moment too early.
Right.
Like, yeah, we know they're going to make the playoffs. That was never in doubt. I just don't want them to have the kumbaya moment and then their biorhythms go back down. And all of a sudden it's like you get to the first round of the playoffs and we hate each other again.
Right.
So, all right. That being said, thank you to our guest, Derek Stank, and best of luck to him as well. He has done a great job here in Bedford, and by all means, he will certainly be missed. Thank you to my co-host, Andrew Hansen, as well as everybody here at Bedford 105.1, Harry, Colleen, and Bill for all the work that they do. And good luck to the Bedford boys hockey team. Bring home a state title. Make us proud. You already have, but bring home a state title. You've been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.